Welcome to the Issue List podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, a bit of a departure from our normal format. A lot of times we'll interview a big headliner at the beginning of our show and then break into some issues later on. This week, we found the Jussie Smollett story so fascinating that we wanted to do a deep dive into it. It's one of those stories that kind of reminds me of the O.J. Simpson story in that it is a story that is so many different things at once. It's a story about race, about homosexuality, about crimes. It's a story about politics. It's a story about celebrity, about lying, mental illness, potentially. I mean, there's so many different aspects to it and all these different layers. And so we assembled a panel with one of the smartest legal minds I know, with one of the smartest political minds I know, and one of the most connected entertainment minds I know, and got them all together to sort of talk about what they know about this case and sort of the broader implications of it. A real deep dive into Jussie Smollett really leads our show. We also had a conversation with Ben Carson this week. I drove out to Fontana. It took about 2.5 hours to get there. We barely got there in the rain as he visited Southern California. And he said a lot of surprising things, especially about President Trump and the state of our politics today. So it's an interesting show. It's a little bit different show, but we're really proud of it, and we hope you enjoy it. Take a listen. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, the issue is a disturbing hoax.
Why would anyone, especially an African-American man, use the symbolism of a noose to make false accusations?
From TV star to perp walk. Now the police say Jussie Smollett faked a racist, homophobic attack on himself. What's next for the disgraced star, for our politics, and for one of Fox's biggest shows? Plus,
why you? Of all the Democrats that are running, why you?
Our conversation with Senator Elizabeth Warren as she officially begins SoCal's 2020 presidential primary in February 2019. And the world focused on Hollywood this weekend for the biggest award show on the planet. But how do you make the Oscars more watchable and a show someone would actually want to host? That and more with our panel standing by right now. There they are, Dax Holt, Areva Martin, Dan Schnur. Plus,
what's the president like to work for?
When he's not being attacked, he's actually a very nice guy.
Our exclusive one-on-one interview with Secretary Ben Carson on SoCal's homeless problem and working for President Trump. The Issue Is starts right now. Jamal Lyon put on a show, all right, on Empire back in the day. In real life, Jussie Smollett now has the biggest audience of his career, but it could be his last audience for years to come. Thanks so much for joining us. There are so many compelling stories this week. We're starting our show with our panel full of many of our favorite guests. There they are right there. We begin with Dax Holt. He's a familiar face. He's been seen on TMZ, Access Hollywood, Dish Nation, and more. He's currently the managing editor of Hollywood Pipeline's website, which had a nice redesign, nicely done there.
Thank you.
He co-hosts their YouTube page as well. And as an extension of that, he co-hosts a Hollywood Pipeline podcast in partnership with AM 790 KABC Radio. Areva Martin is a civil rights attorney, activist, and author. Her latest book is called Make It Rain, How to Use the Media to Revolutionize Your Business and Brand. I need some help with that. And she's a co-host of Face the Truth on CBS, along with Vivica A. Fox and a great panel of ladies. Dan Schnur, former chair of the California Fair Practices Commission. He worked as a communications aide to the late Senator John McCain during his presidential run and to former California Governor Pete Wilson. And he teaches about politics and leadership at UC Berkeley, Pepperdine, and USC, where back in the day, he was my favorite professor on campus. So welcome. Good to have you guys back. Dan and Areva were our first panel on this show, part of our first group on episode one. So good to have both of you guys back here
old.
As well. So let's start with this Jussie Smollett story. Let's put up a cover from the New York Post, of course, simply liar with his mugshot. It's really a legal story, a political story, entertainment story. It's about race, class, celebrity, so many layers around the table, which is why so many people are talking about. I just want to go around the table real quick with your sort of big takeaway from the story on Jussie.
I think I was just shocked. I mean, more than anything, at the beginning, coming to his defense, I mean, I was defending him on every interview that I was doing out there, and I'm like, you got to listen to this guy, listen to, he's a victim, and then to just watch all these details unfold and feeling like so silly that I was tricked into this.
Yeah, I think like you, Dax, I was frustrated. I was saddened. I was disheartened. I felt really at some point like this was a family member, because I had an opportunity to do a parade with Jussie. And not only was he an advocate on the LGBT front and on the African American social justice front, but he was also a big advocate for women. As a social justice activist myself, if these allegations are true, I can't think of anything that would set the civil rights movement back more than someone lying about being attacked, being called the N-word, and using race as a tool to, enrich their own lives.
One of two things is happening here, and I don't know the man. Either he is suffering from some very, very difficult emotional problems for which he deserves our sympathy, or alternatively, he's decided in the most craven of ways that exploiting all these social and cultural tensions is a way to advance his career, which is tragic in an entirely different way. But I will make you a prediction. Dennis Rodman, the former basketball player, once said, "The only bad press is an obituary." My prediction is that weeks or months from now, Smolens and the people around him will find a way to turn this into a boon for his career rather than end to it.
Yeah, Roger Stone seems to think that. So we're going to talk more about that in a moment as well. Let's start, though. Let's break this down. We have legal, we have political, we have entertainment. Let's start with the legal, which is Ariva's wheelhouse. What's ahead for him legally? And how do you even go to defend this sort of case?
So legally what's happening, he's been charged with making a false police report. And under Illinois law, that comes under its disorderly conduct statute. It's a class 4 felony, and it carries a 1 to 3 year prison term plus a fine and possibly restitution. What I think will happen is the process of negotiation will start. His legal team will start talking to the prosecutors about some kind of plea deal. I don't think it's in Jussie's best interest to go forward with a trial. I cannot imagine that a jury sitting in Chicago will find him innocent or will acquit him, given what the police chief says is the mound of evidence they have against him. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to probably see some kind of plea deal so he avoids jail time, a fine, restitution, and he goes and he tries to put his life back together.
Interesting. Let's talk about the politics for a moment. And Dan, we saw a tweet from President Trump getting involved in this this week. Let's put that up on the screen. He said, "What about Make America Great Again? The tens of millions of people you insulted with your racist and dangerous comments." A very different kind of tweet we saw from Kamala Harris when this first broke, where she essentially said that he was one of the kindest and gentlest people that she'd ever met. She described this as a modern day lynching. Then she sort of struggled to walk that back when asked about it. Take a listen.
Okay, so I will say this about that case. I think that the facts are still unfolding.
She eventually said that it was sort of sad what happened in this situation. What do you make of all the political fallout on both sides here?
Well, I mean, one of the biggest problems, one of the biggest frustrations in 21st century politics is what we call selective outrage. You get really, really outraged when somebody who you already don't like does something wrong, and you find a way to overlook that exact same thing when it's somebody on your side. When the story first broke, the Democratic presidential candidates were outraged, and Donald Trump was silent. As soon as the story turned, the Democrats turn to crickets, and Trump gets loud.
When I was thinking back to this whole thing, I was surprised, though, that we didn't hear from Obama, only because being from Chicago, this went down in his town. It almost makes me wonder if he had the inside track on what was really going on behind the scenes, so he chose to stay out of it.
Well, I can tell you this, Dax. I spent a lot of time talking to friends. I went to college in Chicago, and talking to friends and family in Chicago, and almost everyone said from the beginning of the story, they never believed it. They said, first of all, it's too cold in Chicago.
Walking around, particularly this community.
Chicago residents never believed the story.
Yeah. Let's talk about the entertainment aspect of this, Dax, which is really your wheelhouse. Empire now saying that Jamal is not going to be a part of the last two episodes. Where does the show, though, go forward long term, and where does Jussie Smollett's career go from here?
Yeah, I mean, the show's fine. Let's be honest. They will write him out of the script for the last two episodes, decide what they're going to do for the next season, if they're going to bring him back, how this plays out in court to depend on if he's going to have a job or not. I think that he won't have a job after this. I think it's extremely embarrassing for a lot of people, not to mention he shows up to work after being released. And I'm thinking, who goes back to work right away? Like, how embarrassing to walk in there and go, hey, guys, sorry, I was in jail. I apologize. Or
how
I was in custody.
Yeah,
how was your weekend?
Got him credit for showing up.
Yeah, well, but he's sitting there and he's apologizing to, you know, his castmates. I'm sorry, I'm embarrassing you guys. Well, yeah, this was all over money. And you got to think there's other people on that cast that don't get paid the reported $65,000 an episode. And they're looking at him going, you did this over money? As for his career, that might be a bigger hit. I disagree. I don't think that it's going to take a couple of months for this to go away. I think...
Well, the court case won't even be over in a couple of months.
I think years, people will start to forget over years. Yeah. But right away, no one's going to want to trust him. No one's going to want to hire him, because if he's willing to go to this length for either popularity or fame or money, then I wouldn't want him on my team.
And I should clarify, just very quickly, I don't think it will go away either. Mm-hmm. I think someone with a smart publicist can leverage this attention into...
Then I think you're going to see him on Celebrity Big Brother, because that's going to be the only show that's going to really want someone like that.
We've
had a lot of issues as guests on Celebrity Big Brother.
I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying, you probably won't get him on another sitcom right away.
All right, well, up next, let's talk California politics. My conversation with Senator Elizabeth Warren, as the Southern California presidential primary officially got underway this week. By the way, is there such a thing as being too old to be president? We'll talk about that as well.
Why you? Of all the Democrats that are running, why you?
So, look, for me, this isn't about politics. This is my life's work.
That's part of my conversation with Senator Elizabeth Warren this week, as she became the first major candidate to campaign for president in Southern California. All of the many Democratic candidates are going to try and show how much they love L.A., as our primary here is earlier and more important than ever. The California primary is March 2020 instead of June. Back with our panel, Dax Holt, Areva Martin, and Dan Schnur. And Dan, this is really what you do. You helped create the L.A. Times USC poll. How do you assess the state of the California primary race right now?
I think if you start out by looking at that Elizabeth Warren event that you attended, Alex, 1,800 people showing up 13 months before the California primary, not in Santa Monica, not in Beverly Hills, not in downtown L.A. or Southgate or Compton, but 1,800 people in Glendale, means that the level of enthusiasm, the level of motivation, the fervor among Democratic Party regulars is off the charts. Mm-hmm. That event tells you less about Elizabeth Warren than it tells you about the state of the Democratic Party electorate.
And not everybody we talked to out there were even necessarily 100% decided on Elizabeth Warren. They were just excited to hear what she had to say and are excited to hear from the 50,000 Democratic candidates that are going to be coming here. We found out one of whom is going to be coming here is Senator Bernie Sanders, officially making his announcement this week that he's running for president. Got a big fundraising total right away out of that. We're hearing through a lot of news organizations that Joe Biden is leaning heavily towards running for president. Warren, Biden, Sanders, not necessarily the fresh face of the Democratic Party on the older end of the spectrum when it comes to politicians. Is there such a thing, Areva, as too old?
No, absolutely not.
Thank you.
No. because I wouldn't even know what that number would be, and I don't think anyone would know. Is it 45, which I guess you have to be to run? Is
35.
Okay, 35. So does 40 make you too old then if you only have to be 35? So I don't think it's about your age. I think it's about what you stand for and how you connect with voters.
I'm interested to see if Speaker Nancy Pelosi's success as Speaker changes the way some people in the Democratic Party think about age, because there were a lot of people that didn't want her to be Speaker this time around, thought maybe she's too old, but she's had a lot of success because of her experience, and I wonder if that'll change people's perceptions.
I don't know if it changes feelings about age as much as it changes feelings about Trump. After the 2016 election, this mythology existed that you could not directly confront Donald Trump, that you could not lower yourself to his level, you couldn't get down in the mud. And what we learned from Nancy Pelosi over the last 45 to 60 days is it's not that you can't confront Donald Trump effectively, it's that Hillary Clinton couldn't confront Donald Trump effectively.
Who would be the strongest nominee for the Democrats? Who do you think?
Probably Joe Biden, right? I mean, I think there's a lot of states that he could get back that the Democrats need.
I'm team Kamala Harris. You are not going to win the Democratic nomination without African-American women. And African-American women have made it pretty clear, although we're still a long ways from 2020. But so far, the enthusiasm amongst black women for Senator Harris is just you know, amazing.
So, Alex, as you know, when I was growing up, I used to spend my vacations working in my grandpa's factory on the west side of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Mm. The people who worked in that factory were lifelong Democrats until 2016. And this is why I think Dax's point is an important one. Joe Biden knows how to talk to those voters in a way that many Democrats no longer do. That said, and it's going to sound like I'm hedging my bets here because, of course, I am.
Because yeah. I'm about to hit you. If you look at throw you an elbow.
First of all, I'm a big Kamala Harris fan. Kamala Harris is a rookie who gets called up to the big leagues. Mm. If you look at the exit polls from the midterm elections, what fueled the Democratic takeover of the House was female voters. I would say that a female candidate has a starting out big advantage on being the nominee.
All right, well, up next, we're talking Oscars. So we're playing a little Queen in honor of Bohemian Rhapsody's nomination. We want to remind people that you can listen to our show in podcast form. All you got to do is subscribe, search for The Issue Is wherever you stream your podcasts. We'll be right back with more. By the way, Queen's going to be opening up the Oscars. The opening performance is going to be Queen and Adam Lambert. It's going to be kind of cool. Instead of the host, you get Queen.
That's an attack to end me. That's not an attack to just stop the Oscars.
Kevin Hart will not be hosting the Oscars this year. Apparently no one is. But millions will still be focused on Hollywood for the Academy Awards on Sunday night. Back with our panel to talk about that, Dan Schneur, Reba Martin, and Dax Holt. And Dax, let's begin with you, Mr. Hollywood Pipeline. the Oscars have tried to make the show more watchable. They put out the idea of having this popular movie category. That was shot down by the Academy. They put out the idea that we're going to do some awards during the commercial break. That was shot down by the Academy. They said, we're going to have Kevin Hart. That was shot down by the public. What's going on with the Academy Awards, and how do you make it more watchable?
It's just so boring. I mean, it's like, who wants to watch 3-4 hours of an award show? Yeah. Honestly, the way I like to watch award shows these days is go on the day after and get a recap of what were the best moments. And so if they could condense an award show to, hey, I'm going to do 3 performances, here's the top awards, and just squish it up for me and give it to me, people would start watching.
You know, they're responding, I think, so much to public pressure that they're all over the place. And I've just felt like, you know, who's in charge? It felt like to me no one was in charge. No one was willing to make the tough call and then stand up and say, this is why I made the call.
So we're a little bit outside my wheelhouse here, but I'll offer you this, melding the few segments together. Yeah. If you have Jussie Smollett and Elizabeth Warren as co-hosts of the Oscars, that will draw you ratings.
Let's talk about, the big award, though, is Best Picture. And this is one of the most wide open fields that we have ever seen. So I'm going to ask you who is going to win and who should win. Dan, we'll start with you.
Okay. Roma is going to win but shouldn't. I thought it was pretentious. I think the Green Book ought to win. I thought it was amazing. But I will say this, as a representative on this panel of the Biden generation, props to Bohemian Rhapsody for giving us cultural comfort food for all of us old people to believe that our musical tastes still matter.
Well, I'm going to say this should be the year for Spike Lee. He's waited 30 years to, you know, get the nomination from the Oscars, and Black Klansman is an amazing movie. I think I saw it 5 or 6 times.
I think Black Klansman should be up there. That and A Star is Born. I loved both of them. I think it's going to be Roma, even though it was so boring.
Yeah. I think that Black Panther should win. I think it was the most important movie. I think it changed the genre itself. It was a major step forward for diversity, and it would be great to have a movie that people actually saw be celebrated by the Academy Awards.
Wakanda Forever.
All right. Thank you so much to a great, great panel, one of our all-time favorites. And speaking of Black Panther, we're going to have a little Kendrick Lamar, his Oscar-nominated song, All the Stars. When we come back, an exclusive interview with Secretary Ben Carson, and also a job update. What is Sean Spicer up to next? We now know. It's a great song, isn't it?
It's a good song.
Yeah.
And this week, Dr. Ben Carson visited Southern California in the midst of a war of words between leaders in Washington and Sacramento. We sat down with the secretary in Fontana.
Well, who wouldn't want to be in California?
Right.
In an exclusive one-on-one interview, Secretary of Housing and Urban Development Ben Carson talks to us about his visit to Southern California.
We're looking for ways that we can get more people to be self-sufficient.
In Fontana, he visits CityLink, a faith-based initiative that works with the government. In Watts, he presents a check for more than $3 million to Nickerson's Garden, one of the largest housing projects in the country.
Hi, Dr. Carson. How are you?
Last year, we were with him as he visited Skid Row for the first time.
How does it compare to other places that you've visited?
It's worse.
Is this the worst place you think you've seen in the country?
I do believe so.
The secretary is in charge of the federal response to homelessness. He says there are too many housing regulations in this state.
What do you say to critics who say that the federal government isn't doing enough to help?
I say that there's a lot more money in the private sector than there is in the federal government. A lot more. But, you know, it's not the federal government's problem. It's everybody's problem.
Dr. Carson comes to California at a moment when Governor Gavin Newsom is suing the president over his border wall, and the president is threatening to cut off millions in federal aid regarding high-speed rail here. I asked the secretary to respond to Californians who feel caught in the middle of all this.
I say to those people, don't take your cue from our leaders. Recognize that every single person has a sphere of influence.
But don't the leaders allocate all this funds? I mean, there's a lot of money on the table.
Well, you know what? The leaders will change if the people don't buy it.
But the one of those leaders is your boss, the president.
Well, nevertheless, you know, he responds to attacks and things like that. But what if we, the people, say, you know what? We're not buying all this enemy stuff.
After running against the president in the primaries, Dr. Carson has been in his cabinet for over 2 years now.
What's the president like to work for?
When he's not being attacked, he's actually a very nice guy.
Secretary Carson says he, too, is often misunderstood.
My motivation actually comes from my faith, and I think we have an obligation to help other people.
Our thanks to Dr. Carson. And since he's the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, we thought it'd be fitting to end on Philip Phillips' home. I'm Alex Michelson. Have a good night, great weekend. Thanks for watching The Issue Is. I love that Philip Phillips song.
So thank you so much for listening this week. That's all for our show. We encourage you to subscribe to this podcast and tell people about this show because we're trying to get the word out. Remember to watch us on TV if you can as well on Friday nights at 10:30 p.m. on Fox 11 Los Angeles or set your DVRs. You can also watch us on youtube.com/Alex Michelson. Have a great week.